It's the unknown. Unknown. It's the unknown. Unknown creature.
AKA Lonzo, trying to tell everybody about somebody who can save anybody. Tatiana is here, and she's doing what she do, y'all. What up, T?
You know, just trying to survive out here. It's a heat wave going across the whole country. So the struggle is real. My sister told me that she don't got no air conditioning in Chicago. I said, ma'am.
Wow. It's a hard and bad time. I was just told someone's AC just went out as well. Bad time for AC.
She hasn't had AC the whole time she's been in that house, though, which has been like 7 years.
Well, it's Chicago, though.
Yeah, but in the summer, Chicago has four seasons just like anywhere else.
What's the, on average, the heat in Chicago in the summer?
Now, you know, with climate change and the fact that I haven't lived there in a long time, mm-hmm. I'm sure it's much hotter these last summers than it. Like, I remember, like, you know, 70s, 80s. But there, it's in the 90s this week, like everywhere else.
Yeah, now that's hot. But 70s and 80s, you could, especially 70s, without
AC. Are you kidding me? No.
Man, you spoiled, man.
If it's 75 degrees, you don't got your air conditioning on?
I don't know. I don't touch anything, man. I'm a married man. We learned a long time ago. We don't touch anything.
Yeah, well, if I was the other person on the half of the marriage, I would be turning it on because this is nonsense. I have this smart thermostat that likes to try to conserve energy. And so it'll be like turning itself to 75 for the AC. And I'll be like, oh, my God, I'm so hot. And I have to look at my smart thermostat. And I'm like, why are you doing this to me?
Now, I'm cold natured. That's the other thing. I can't stand cold weather. Now, I don't want it too high. So, like, I passed up on the opportunity to see the Cowboys and the Panthers play last year because I think they played in December. And I'm not going outside in December.
Oh, right, because football is, in the open dome.
Yeah. I go to football games in, like, August, September. October is pushing it. But, yeah, that's my norm.
Yeah, I don't know about,
3 hours?
I don't think I would want to do anything else. I mean, in North Carolina, it's hit or miss.
Yeah.
Because it might not actually be cold in December. But if it's actually
That's the
cold,
thing. Yeah. You're right. How's Micah doing?
He's lovely. You know, he's living his best life. He's having some sleep regression. So he had been sleeping through the night, and now he started waking up again. I'm just like, can you stop waking up? Because we were past this, but I've learned about a thing called sleep regression, where around this age, they start backtracking. I've been reading that it could be due to growth spurts, so they need more food, so they might be waking up because they're hungry, mm-hmm. or it could be due to them just, their sleep cycles are changing with age, and when they wake up, they don't really know yet how to put themselves back to sleep necessarily, and so they just start complaining some, but hoping it's temporary. But other than that, he's excellent and great. We went today. I had a pedicure for the first time since, you know, he's been born. So I was looking crazy out here. I've been looking crazy. My hands are still not.
I'm not gonna say anything. Michael been around for a minute now. I'm gonna leave it at.
That's been since March. He's 3 months and 10 days old. So I've been like, I still didn't get my hands done, which I usually always get my hands and nails, but I'm like, if I got to hold the baby, I can't get my nails done. But I was like, at least I'm going to get myself, I just couldn't wait anymore. I got myself a pedicure, but he was like super chill while we were at the salon. He was being very good. So, yeah.
Cool. I think a month is the longest I've ever gone without a pedicure. I don't even know. I'll probably lose my mind. But
yeah, this is definitely it's not characteristic. I typically always have my hair. And I had a colleague who told me, she's like, I've never seen you without your hair done. I've never seen you without your nails done. And so I told, and I remember she was telling me this before Micah. She's like, I have literally never seen you without your hair done. I've never seen you without your nails done. She said, and your hair, and she said, and your hands and your toes always match as well. Because I always get them both done. So after I had him, I sent her a message and I said, my hair is not done. My nails are not done. I said, I got a scarf on my head. I haven't had a wax. She was like, what? This is not you. So I'm totally outside of myself. But you know, we do what we gotta do.
Mothers, man, I'm telling you, mothers love the sacrifices, right?
Yes, I've definitely been sacrificing.
Yeah, it's all worth it. But you mentioned sleep regression. I'm like, that's pretty, how do I want to put it? So today, it kind of touches on our host, because like parenting or nurturing a baby is very different now than it was years ago. Like even when you look at pediatric advice, like it's more evidence-based, I think. Like they promoted breastfeeding when I had a little one too, but you know, I guess in terms of technology, when you look at
when wasn't breastfeeding promoted?
Well, I think there's some generation when there was uncertainty or they didn't have as much information. Now I'm gonna have to Google this. I didn't even think about that. But I'm trying to make a point, man. No, in terms of technology, like apps, like they got apps for like feeding and sleep and diaper changes now, right? I would have never. Have you utilized any of those? Or
I absolutely use an app. So I track every time I change his diaper, and if it's pee or poo, I track, or both. I track when he naps, how long he's asleep. I track when he's had a bath, story time, tummy time, and then, yeah, meals and how much he ate each time he eats. So I don't even know, because like, so when we were in the hospital, mm-hmm. anytime the nurses came into our room, they were like, when did he last eat and how much did you give him? If I didn't have the app to track that, and at first when they kept asking me, I'm like, oh man, I don't remember. And I'm tired, I'm sleep deprived. I'm like, mm-hmm. I don't remember that. So they ended up coming in and giving me like a paper. They were like, here, this will help you. Here's a paper and a pen to like write it down or whatever. But like, if I didn't have the app and was having to remember all that stuff, and then every time you go to the doctor for their doctor's appointments, they ask you like, how often is he eating? Mm-hmm. How much does he eat with each meal? They ask you all of that kind of stuff. So if I wasn't tracking it, like even without an app, were they not asking those questions in the past? Like, would you keep a little journal or something? Because you still had to track it.
I know I didn't. I think I was guesstimating most of the time. Like if they asked, is that the only reason you're tracking? Or is there like a notification that says, hey, check on the baby now for diaper change?
There's not a notice. So you can pay extra for features that'll remind you. So my friend who has a baby, he's 3 months. Mm-hmm. Or no, he's 5 months older than Micah. She pays for the paid version. So she, it'll tell her like, hey, it's probably a good time for a nap. Wow. You know, it's the ideal time or whatever. So it'll notify. I don't think it's worth it for that, because, yeah. It gave me like a couple of weeks for the premium stuff, but I'm just like, I can see when he seems like he's wanting to get ready for a nap, cause he'll start being cranky, or like, I know that typically when he's been up for an hour and 15 minutes, he's starting to get ready to go down again. So I can just know that without the app. It's helpful mm-hmm. for me if I'm like, dang it, when was the last time that he had a bottle? Should I, like, I can just look at it and say, oh, okay, it's been 2.5 hours. I should probably give him another bottle or something like that. Or sometimes I'm like, I think that I changed his diaper more recently than I look at the app, and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's been almost 2 hours since he's had a diaper. Because if it's not poop, like,
yeah,
it might not, you know, be front of mind. And a lot of these diapers now, this I know they did not used to have back in the day, they'll turn blue when they've peed in the diaper. But even if it's just like a little teeny little trickle, it'll turn blue. And so I might touch the diaper and it feels dry, but it says that he's had a pee. Or one of the brands of diapers I use, it turns blue, but it's very faint. So just like tracking it is helpful for not only keeping on track for his medical appointments and stuff, but also just so I can make sure that I'm doing stuff on a good cadence if it's not front of mind.
Cool. I was you touched on it when you said the brand you use, because I'm suspecting that's a high-end brand of diaper. It turns blue.
They all turn blue these days.
All of them? Are you sure?
I think so, because
I don't know about
the
that.
Ones in the hospital turn blue, and those were not high-end. I have friends who use diapers that are not the same brand, and they turn blue. I think that's just a commonplace thing now.
Man, I'm going to Google this stuff.
Google it. Google it right now on air.
That sounds like some high-end diaper stuff, man.
Now, he does use nice diapers, but even the cheap ones do that.
Do all diapers. Oh, my God. I take it. It take too long, though. Never mind. We'll check later. That's.
I'm about to Google it right now. You can phone it up because I've got my computer right here.
No, see. Just want to call me out.
Yes, I do want to call you out. You always, every time I've been out here, you call me out.
As for the audience, as for our listeners, they'll get a kick out of it. That we're comfortable saying whatever.
Have mercy.
Do all diapers, what are you Googling? Do all type diapers turn
what blue? Proportion? Because if you say, say, well, not all.
That's the way I wanted to Google that.
No, what proportion of diapers turn blue? Okay, a wetness indicator on a diaper typically turns blue. That ain't what I asked you.
See, if you had said, did it my way. Or put what brand of diapers turn blue. This is really our norm, listeners. I will tell you this.
I told you could have kept talking while I was Googling
this. We debate all the time about things. And
okay, so now I Googled, how common is it for diapers to have a wetness indicator?
That didn't say blue. That said a wetness indicator.
That's what it is. Because when I put turn blue on the previous search, it called it a wetness indicator. So that gave me now the terminology to use.
That seemed a little more broad, but go ahead. How many?
Wetness indicators are a very common feature on disposable diapers, particularly for babies and in adult incontinence products. Okay. They are designed to make it easier to determine when a diaper is wet and needs changing. How they work is that they change color. So that is just how it works.
You told me that. So
it says percentage. It right here. I'm reading percentage. It.
Percentage. I mean percentage. See?
Okay.
Because if you said you live with this common. So common means.
It just said very common. I said, how common is it? And it said very common. Okay. Because you're trying me.
No, we'll debate. We can push that to the side because I want to talk about Tyler, the Creator.
Hold on here. Okay, while there isn't a precise percentage available, many major diaper brands, including Pampers, Huggies, The Honest Company, and none of those are even the brands that I use. So that means also the two brands that I use incorporate wetness indicators into their products. These indicators typically a color-changing strip help parents and caregivers easily identify when a diaper needs changing. It's naming other brands, Kirkland Signature Diapers, which are sold at Costco, also.
But could I argue that it's the more expensive Pampers, version of Pampers? The standard Pampers doesn't have a blue indicator.
Huggies and Pampers? That's standard.
No. I'm just saying there's a higher end, like a higher brand of Pampers. Like
this remember that
premium
time,
Pampers.
Wait. Last thing. Do you remember that time when I ran out of diapers before I overdue and I had to go buy them cheap diapers and I was really upset?
Yeah.
They had the wetness indicator.
Yeah, they?
Yes.
Well, what's cheap to Tatiana may not be cheap to.
Listen. Okay. First of all, them diapers came from Dollar General.
Okay. All right, Dollar General,
second of all,
sponsor.
They were mad cheap. They were like $11. It was mad cheap.
Okay. All right, you won this debate. I concede.
I win.
Can I talk about Tyler the Creator? Because I really want your take on this.
Yes, go ahead.
All right. So, rapper, singer, songwriter, producer Tyler the Creator. He said this. I want to read verbatim. We should ban podcasts because we give a lot of people who aren't smart and just want attention platforms to be loud and incorrect, and other stupid people follow them. Where are the people with skills? We need electricians, drummers, painters, teachers. What do you think, T? What are your thoughts on that?
Okay, I have multiple thoughts. I understand where he's coming from because mm-hmm. there are a lot of stupid people with platforms, a lot of people saying stuff that's loud and wrong. Mm-hmm. Some of those people, there's misinformation and there's disinformation. Misinformation is people are just incorrect and they think they're correct and they're spreading stuff. And then disinformation is when people know that they're spreading stuff that's not true and they're spreading it on purpose. So we have a lot of both of those things going on.
I agree.
So I get where he's coming from. However, do I agree that podcasts should be banned? No, podcasts should not be banned. That sounds a lot like censoring people. That sounds a lot like when we've had book bans. People are mm-hmm. not, you know, in favor of banning books because we don't like the content that's in them. Burning books we've seen in the past. So I just think it's a slippery slope to start talking about the different ways in which we can silence people. There's also been a lot of just like on social media, and especially as algorithms have become, mm-hmm. you know, more used by different social media platforms, where they've used different algorithms to censor out like Black creatives, for example, and not show their content at the top of algorithms, or like different social justice oriented content that's not sensitive at all, tagging it as always sensitive. And so they're like not showing it. So there's just been so many ways that media and the powers that be have tried to, you know, inhibit different content. And I don't want to see any new way of limiting people from being able to have their voices heard. I mean, freedom of speech needs to just be freedom of speech. If there's stupid people following other stupid people, that's just on them to be stupid. So, like, no, I don't agree that we need to limit that content. I do understand where he's coming from, like I said, because there's a lot of disinformation and misinformation. Mm-hmm. And then to the second part of his point of, like, what we need is more electricians, what we need is more drummers and painters and whatever. Why are those two things mutually exclusive? They're actually not. So, like, you can still have people who are doing all of those other professions. It doesn't mean that just because podcasts exist that every young person is going to grow up and be a podcaster. A lot of people aren't even really able to make a living doing it. Even if they do it, they probably still do have some other job. And so they might be an electrician who also has a podcast. So I think he's conflating ideas. I get it. I agree that there are a lot of stupid people saying stupid things. That's the only part of what he said that I agree with.
Well said. Great summary. The misinformation versus disinformation. I like that you added that. I didn't even think about that. I want to know what you think. I think that it's more people putting out misinformation. They think they're speaking the gospel and they're off the target. What do you think?
I think that it's true that there are
like, why you laugh?
There's parts of it that I agree. Anyway, I think it's true that there are more actual people who are misinformed.
Yeah.
But I also think that there might be a few number of people who are putting out disinformation, but because of all these bots, mm-hmm. where they're able to create, like one person could create a 1,000 bot accounts.
Yep.
And so then even though it's one person who's trying to spread information or one entity or agency or government who's trying to spread this information, they could be doing so through thousands of miniature platforms to do that with. So, or if it's one, you know, network, I'm not going to name the network, news network that likes to do this, but if it's one of those networks and they're doing it through multiple different shows on their channel or multiple different social media accounts that they run, and you know, spreading mm-hmm. that to also lots of individuals who don't know that it's disinformation, and then those individuals start spreading it too, like even if it's a small number of those who are actually trying to be deliberate in their disinformation, it can have a big impact.
I love what everything you said, you know. And I was thinking, so when I was taking public speaking classes years ago, I saw this and I watched the best public speakers, right? And I learned one thing from them, like people trust the views of those who align with their views. If I have an opinion and I'm watching this person who's a eloquent speaker and they're saying everything I believe in, man, you know, you're going to just gravitate towards that. And even like you may have some doubts initially, and then it's like, this person just confirmed what I was thinking. I didn't know whether it was true or not. I actually think about COVID, you know, on both sides, there were a lot of things going out, a lot of misinformation, disinformation, to your point. And people were posting things because I have some friends who shared some of the doubts and along the lines of some of the conspiracies. And then you had these YouTubers posting things that supported what they were believing. And they were like, hey, look at this, you know? So I think that's part of it too. And I'm also shocked that he just said podcasts like you, because it's bigger than podcasts. You have YouTube, Facebook channels. And I'll just say this. So you should fact check everything. Like you and I were just Googling now. And honestly, it wasn't planned, but you should fact check things. Spiritual content, I'm always saying, if you can't show me in the Bible, we're going to have a problem. And even when Muna's on here too, she will always, when she'll quote a scripture, she'll say, you know, fact check me, y'all, look it up. Cause I think that's being responsible and holding yourself accountable too. But I love what you said about the algorithm too. And then the clickbait, you know, group. So you put out that information, it may not be accurate, but when everyone else is liking it, and you next thing you know, you got like, say, 12,000 people liking something. Now I click on, I see you got 12,000 likes. I'm thinking, man, this got to be true, right?
Yeah, that's unfortunate. Because I've seen some stuff. I can't remember, but like I remember recently there was like something that was floating around the internet, and people. What's a lot of times people see stuff like that, like, oh, this person is dead, and then they're actually not dead.
Yes.
Just stuff like that. But yeah, as you said, like, they're looking for stuff to confirm, and that's what that phenomenon is called, like confirmation bias, or even and like, this was not connected at all, but even when we were just Googling this stuff, and I was like, no, because the way that you're wording that is going to come up. with the answer because of the way that you chose to word that. So I was like, no, I'm not wording it like that. So to that point, like, you can find a resource that says whatever you want the resource to say, quite frankly. So you have to be mindful of, like, how you ask. Because you said, I'm going to Google all of them this. And I said, no, if you say that, it's going to say, no, they don't all. But that's not the question. We need to know what the proportion is. So, like... Okay, you just cracking up a little hard over there, but yes.
I'm laughing because we had these debates before, and I Googled something, and I intentionally Googled, and I can't remember what it was, but you called me out on it because I intentionally worded it so it would support my argument. You caught me out on it.
I didn't know you did it on purpose, though. I just knew that the way that you worded it was off. I knew you tried to do that on purpose.
Oh, bro, that's hilarious. But I love this because we didn't even plan this. It just all came together. Because we just illustrated how this thing can go, man. And you think about, this is the scary part, because I'm not going to name names, but there have been celebrities who were diagnosed with cancer. Mm-hmm. And then they saw information about, forget about chemo and start eating this or take that. And they actually pushed chemo and they rejected the notion of chemotherapy, and they're no longer with us, you know? And so it can really be deadly if we're not careful. Or, you know, the preacher who delivers, we already talked about it too, so I won't even touch on it anymore, but we do, like, now on YouTube, you'll see some ministers who I think is clickbaiting strategies. They will say things knowing that they're going to get a whole bunch of views on their social media page. I don't even know if that, well, I would hate to think that they believe some of the stuff, but they're saying it in the pulpit. So, but yeah, it's strange out here right now.
Yeah, there was some pastor, I don't remember who it was, and I don't even remember what they were talking about, but I remember that during his sermon, I just saw the video on social media, he pulled out
LA.
Virgin collard greens, squash and tomatoes, apples and okra and fresh sweet potatoes, $25 bag stuffed full of grub. These are the things at the Black Farmers Hub. Ooh, ooh, onions and radishes, turnips and tamarind, turmeric and garlic and ginger's on hand here. Black beans, cucumbers, zucchini and hay. Let's not forget Nature's 360 Cafe. Fresh pressed juices, we've got smoothies, acai bowls too. From herbs to hoop cheese and wines made locally, it's at the Black Farmer's Hub.
But then next, now he's holding Dirty Magazines as well. Right. And I forgot about this part. He opens it up. And he's like, oh, this is actually a real one. Like, whatever. I don't know who gave him this stack of magazines, but what? He didn't know it was going to be real actual nudity on the inside? Man. All of this is on stage in the pulpit during his sermon.
And for informational value only, can you send that to him?
Yes.
Had to put that out there.
You can't see the content of the magazine anyway.
I saw an opening to entertain. go ahead.
This is clearly, well, I don't know. I can't say this person's heart. I can't say what's in their mind or what's in their intention, but it went viral.
Yeah.
To me, I don't think that there was really a need to utilize these props. I don't know. Maybe it was not your intention to be salacious and to just have people click on stuff. But from my perspective, that's what it seems like.
Yeah. And we can, from the outside, say, hey, that's what it appears to be. I don't even know. Like, I wonder the church's membership before and after this.
Mm-hmm.
Like how that looks.
I don't know.
I'm always curious about things like that. But we're just in some crazy times now. And I woke up and I said I was going to talk about this because I know you like the organic flow. But I said, hey, T, I want to talk about preparation because I woke up this morning and the word preparation came to me, and I started thinking about, like, all the things going on around the world, right? And I'm not even going to get into them, you know, because there are different opinions here. And some flawed, some not, some black, some white, you know. But regardless of what position we have, what we're seeing around the world, and so many different elements, is it just brings alarm and concern. But I feel like preparation is like something that we should latch onto as we move forward in this day and time. Does that make sense? What I'm saying?
Preparing for what? Are you talking about for like what we were talking about the other day with the provisions?
So I guess the best way to say it is being spiritually prepared more than anything, right? But we could say financially too, like trying to think about the what else in this world. Like, are you a survivalist? What would you do? Do you have, you know, water in case of, you know, an emergency? Do you have you and I were talking about memorizing phone numbers or what have you. Or we have everything is stored digitally now. So do we have a hard copy? What's the movie on Netflix that the Obamas produced? I forgot the name of it.
Oh, yeah, the one with Sandra Bullock.
Yeah, yeah. So they had the little girl, you know, finally found the VHS tape, you know, because there was no more streaming service. But just preparedness is a broad statement, and I don't know, but that's what word came behind to me. That's it. Thank you. Thank you. But I woke up, you know, this morning with that word preparation, you know, after being up late watching world news, watching sermons, and, you know, that's what came to me. So I don't know how that looks. Maybe I need to pray a little more on that. But does that make sense, or when I put it that way? Or
I mean, I don't know what being spiritually prepared looks like. So I would want to hear more about that. But just having things that you need, you know, I get that. And even in the past, certain churches that I've attended had a lot of focus on just being prepared and stuff like that for anything that might happen, and being prepared with your family. Not necessarily spiritually prepared, but like actually physically prepared for like what if things happen. So like a lot of how the conversation is happening around the world right now of like, we don't know what's going to happen politically and things like that. And like, you know, having your household, you know, just prepare with things, and which has been kind of scary for me, because I like to, this is kind of an aside, but I don't like to eat canned foods. I only buy fresh vegetables. I only buy fresh fruits. I don't buy a lot of frozen stuff. I do buy some frozen stuff, but I don't buy a lot of frozen stuff. Like, you will hardly see any canned goods in my house on a regular basis. So I'm in general, and I don't like bottled water because environmentally, I just am not a proponent of bottled water. Like, I only have it.
I got you. I know why now. Okay.
Yeah, I only have, like, I have distilled baby water for Micah's bottles that I make. If it wasn't for that, I would not, like, I would only have that if there was a purpose. Like, I don't just keep that in my house at all times. So I'm not somebody who would be prepared if something crazy happened. But I want to hear you say more about what spiritually prepared means.
Yeah. You know, you and I have talked about, I always talk about that relationship with God and, you know, just really having real conversations with God. I think, and I have to be more deliberate, and I have done this a lot more, but having that quiet time, like creating, you know, space and time with, you know, with me, along with God, praying that I hear his voice through everything, right? And then just really studying and meditating, really trying to learn the word a lot more, like digging deep into the word. Like, you can read scriptures and understand that verse, but to really like be able to understand what was going on and all the messages within the messages, you know. So you know, when you look at the Gospels, there were so many messages that Jesus delivered, but there's also sub-messages where he's confirming, you know, or affirming that he is definitely a deity. So things like that. And I don't know, just staying prayed up, worshiping. You know, some people want to worship alone. Some people want to worship with others. Some do both. I think you're going to benefit from doing both, and just asking God to give you that wisdom. I just remember as a kid reading about Solomon and saying that same prayer. I want God to give me, you know, wisdom. And, you know, I think I'm a pretty wise guy, right? She's quiet. Am I breaking up, or you just don't want to say it? I said, I think I'm a pretty wise guy. Oh, for real? I said, I think I'm a pretty wise guy.
Oh, I definitely didn't hear that. Goodness. You have your moments.
I'm just playing. But no, just all of that. Did you hear the things I said? I hope I don't have to go over.
Mostly.
Uh-oh.
you're definitely going to want to play back like this entire interview. Sure.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that. And so I do want to go over and read something out of Proverbs, because I remember this when I was a young man, this older woman told me that when her sons went to college, she had them read the book of Proverbs while they were away in college, and just the words of wisdom. And I was thinking about this. I said, okay, I'm going to pull something out of Proverbs because it's more general. It's something that's applicable to what we're talking about. And so I'm going to go to the book of Proverbs, chapter 6, verses 6 through 8. And this is the NIV version. How do I sound? Do I sound clear?
Yep.
All right. So go to the ant, you sluggard. Consider its ways and be wise. It has no commander, no overseer or ruler. Yet it stores its provisions in summer and gather its food at harvest. And so it's clearly talking about planning ahead and using the ants as an analogy, and talking about how they succeed because they take initiative and they don't need that oversight or someone pushing them. Mm-hmm. And I remember reading this years ago, and honestly, it has a lot to do. There are many factors with, like, why I'm always pushing through and trying to do things, and being preparation is golden, you know. You have any thoughts on that?
I don't know about thoughts on the, well, I guess I'll just say my random thoughts. I had three thoughts as you were speaking. I'm not sure that they're worth articulating, but I'll say them since you asked about my thoughts.
Yeah.
My first thought was when you were talking about just being spiritually prepared and like reading more and all of that, I was thinking about when I was growing up, my mom used to have this sign on her mirror that said, "No Bible, no breakfast." It was a reminder to her every day, like to read my Bible first thing in the morning before I do anything else, like even eating. Yeah. So that she would, you know, kind of stay, I guess, spiritually fed first and foremost. So that came up for me while you were talking. The other thing that came up for me when you were sharing that specific scripture was that story. There was this like children's story, which I guess is timely given that the person that's on the interview today is talking about their children's book. But there was that story about the ant and the grasshopper. Mm-hmm. And like, I think the ant was the one who was, I don't remember which one was the prepared one in that story, but like that was making me think of that story of like the one who planned ahead and was prepared by the time that like winter came or whatever, and the other one who wasn't prepared. And I was just thinking, I wonder if that person who wrote that story was inspired by the scripture. It was something that came up for me. And then the third thing that came up for me, now I'm losing my third thought that I had. It was just gratitude. Because when you were talking about just like being prepared, it was making me think of this season in my life and just gratitude, because I always work multiple jobs in the last, since 2000, like, let me see, let's just go back like 10 years. For the last 10 years, there's only been one, I think, year that I can remember that I only had one job. Wow. So I always have like multiple streams of income. And it's just, I think it's just a trauma response from growing up in poverty. And now I'm just like, I'm gonna have a backup job. But anyway, one of my jobs does not have paid parental leave. And so with Micah, like I was used to having like two steady streams of income, and then because I went on FMLA leave, one of them totally stopped. And I was just thinking, I won't say on air the amount of money that I've taken out of my savings to support myself over these last few months, but I was just thinking, I'm really glad that I planned ahead and I even had that there, because if it hadn't been there,
that's deep. That's deep. That is so deep.
I'll tell you off air.
Man, don't probably make me want to cry. But I mean, that's a very good point, man. And you just think, I always think about like that listener who who's like tuning in and they hear what you're saying, and it's like how impactful that could be if someone hears you and takes heed and say, I'm going to start preparing in store and be ready, because you just never know. And they say how many months, like you should save up enough to save for how many months?
3 to 6 months of living.
And like, I want to say something like 80% of Americans couldn't even go a month.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Basically, yeah. Most people are living paycheck to paycheck. And, and there was some other statistic that was a few years ago that said, I don't remember what the percentage of Americans was, that, but it was like a $400 emergency would be devastating to some ridiculous proportion of Americans. That was like way too high, more high than it should be. But like, yeah. And I was at first, like, I was thinking recently, I'm like, oh my gosh, all the money that I have had to take out. But I'm like, you know what? What if it hadn't been there?
Yeah.
I'm just grateful it was there.
But you know, and if you, man, God is good though, because He sees it before it comes. And yeah. I mean, His hands and things, we don't even realize it sometimes. I can just tell you stories where, and don't even get me started on every time I pay a car off, then I total my car, and just so happened, at least I paid it off. But yeah. But, that's some good stuff. And you mentioned children's books, and we talked about how parenting has changed now. And so now we'll talk about our guests before we go to our break, man. This is going to be good, like really, really good, I think. Our guest today is a young author, big brother, someone who is truly destined to make a difference in the world. And I'm telling you, he's the author of the book, The Silliest Day of the Year. And
you gonna have to say that one more time. Author of the book, and say the name one more time.
The Silliest Day of the Year. Man. Yeah. Yeah. I've already purchased it and read it to Solani. You're going to like it. So any thoughts before we wrap up and we come back with our guests?
I'm excited for the book, too. I added it to my Audible wish list because I put my Audible subscription on pause, but it's coming back August 1st. So as soon as I get my next credit, I'm going to use it on that book. I'm just excited. I love to see, all kinds of good, wholesome children's content, especially by people of color.
Yes, yeah. And a young person, man. I've been like, that's exciting to me because it gives us hope, and we know, like, hey, they're going to push us into the next, generation, the next decade, and so on. We got a lot resting on their shoulders, for lack of better words. So,
yeah.
Yep. So when we come back, y'all, Xavier Sneed, author of The Silliest Day of the Year. Tatiana, always good hanging out with you. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
We be praying to God because He's the only way. Open to His word, Circle K. Trouble comes, I don't sweat, it's gonna be okay. Pressure comes from others, but you know I never sway. Yo, I ain't ever going back, I will never turn my back. Like I did my ex, fed ex, but the liver tracks. Where you at? It's about your fate. It's not too late, all these haters gonna hate, but they miss the pearly gates. It's your fate, you know that I'm a cool guy. But at the same time, bold as Mordecai. They say happiness comes from getting high. Mr. Brown said it best, the devil is a lie. Dropping hits like Thriller, No Limit, Percy Miller. I'm redeemed by the Supreme, got my only healer.
Got me, just believe it ever see. It's so good to know that He got me. Even in my wrongs, even when I'm weakest, when I'm strong, let me know that He got me. Gotta give Him praise, cause He always make a way when no way, to let me know that He got me.
Beautiful people, we are back. And now we always hear that the youth are the future, right? But they're just so much more than that. They are the now. And allowing them to lead helps them find purpose and influence their generation, which is why I'm so happy to introduce to you our guest, because this young man is destined to make a difference in the world. He's a focused and insightful author who recently released his first book, The Silliest Day of the Year. Please welcome to the Unknown Preacher LA, Xavier Sneed. Xavier, how are you, sir?
Hello, I'm happy to be here. Very excited.
Man, I'm excited too. I have, I know our listeners are going to really appreciate this, because we're always talking about, you know, our young people, our young adults, and really handing over the baton so they can, you know, just lead us into the next generation. Well, first, do this. Look, tell us a little bit about yourself and what inspired you to write this children's book.
All right. Well, hello. My name is Xavier Sneed, and I think the most important part about myself right now is that I am very involved in theater. So the way that Silliest Day of the Year started is freshman year high school. This is about 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. My drama teacher, Ms. Raznick, whom the book is dedicated to, she had an assignment where we were supposed to find a poem and act it out, I believe. Mm-hmm. Now, I looked online. I didn't find any poems that I really liked or identified with, so I wrote my own. I performed The Silliest Day of the Year as it was written originally for my Drama 1 class, and it was pretty well received. So I thought, hey, what if I go forward with this?
Wow. I love that. I hear so much being resourceful and like saying, hey, this is what's needed and I'm going to make it happen. I absolutely love it. And it's an important piece of the journey, right? Like this, I will even say it helps in discovering who you are, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So now let me ask you this. So how old were you when you first started writing in general? Because I'm a gambling man. I'm assuming you've written before, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think I was in maybe eighth grade. I can't really remember. But we'll say 13, I think.
Gotcha.
And my youth pastor, Miss Sylvia Jones, I go to Baptist Grove Church, and my youth pastor, she asked me if I wanted to start writing the youth newsletter for ages like 6th to 12th grade, which is immersion, which we do over at my church. Mm-hmm. And I said, yeah, I've been writing it ever since. Every week goes out. So I'd say that's my first formal experience with writing.
Man, I love it. Do you know, like, that moment? Was it at that moment or a later time when you said, hey, you know, I really want to be an author. I want to try this.
I think it was absolutely at a later time. Because I don't think I really realized that was in me at first, because
gotcha.
I thought, hey, this is the thing I do, but it's also kind of normalized because it's also a thing that many people do like every day in an English class. So I hadn't really thought about using my voice to impact other people or to spread messages to other people through my writing.
Wow. Until then. You know, it was like funny. So when you did make that decision, you know, it's like this huge transition the way I see it. You go from like just surviving life and then you move into actually shaping lives from people who read your material. So so what's your writing routine like? Like do you write after school, on the weekends, whenever inspired? What's that look like?
I write whenever ideas hit me. Like gotcha. You may have heard that Taylor Swift writes all her songs in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm sort of like that. And that whenever I have inspiration and a sheet of paper or a computer, I'll open a document, or I'll get a sheet of paper, I'll write down whatever the idea is. And if I like it, I continue with it. If I don't, we move on to something else. I usually write like all hours of the day, anytime I think of an idea. Sometimes I'll be like laying in bed late at night. I have an idea, open my notes app, write that down, come back to it tomorrow.
Now, you just said something that surprised me. You actually write, right? You're not in your phone taking notes or on your iPad or any of that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because we were giving someone the business who said that they write still. And it was like, But it was funny. Someone younger than I am said, "Hey, I still."
Oh yeah,
being in a pad and physically write, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it's important not to lose the quality of hard copies too, I think.
Man, I love that. I tell you, man, you're. I like that. Well said. Well said. And I know you're juggling a lot. You're involved in the church as well, right? So can you,
yes.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I am on my church's youth leadership team. So that involves a lot of planning around the aspects of the church for the youth. Like right now we're planning our 150th anniversary celebration of Baptist Grove Church. And the youth is in charge of putting together a sort of documentary about the church's history. Mm-hmm. That we're going to show on the anniversary day to the youth and all the people, all the adults in the church. And another big part about that is that we also get a hand in playing the lessons that go on in church sometimes. Mm-hmm. I think that's really cool because you get to ask yourself, how can I get these kids to see more about God, learn more about God, and have fun while doing it? So we were in a previous series about how you're God's masterpiece. Mm-hmm. So we were just brainstorming, how can we make this fun for people to learn about? How can we get them to get into it? How can we get them interested? We had the idea to use Lego sets without instructions to build stuff. Because the lesson was, you have all the pieces, but God has the plan. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that. All that stuff. Church.
I love it. It sounds like your church has really created that environment where the youth can flourish, right?
Oh, yeah.
That sounds great. Matter of fact, if you want to say the name of your church, because I definitely think they're worthy of hearing their name out on the international streaming. So, yeah, if you want to say the name of the church, this is good stuff.
Baptist Grove Church. Since I was born, Baptist Grove Church.
Wow.
I don't remember the address. It's like Leesville Road or something, but stop by. It's a good place, good people.
Yeah. And I have attended there, I think, twice. It really is. And I'll just add that, you know, again, it's commendable what you're doing. We need you. We need our youth because we know our youth are not. I don't think we really, as a whole, I'm not speaking as, you know, a particular church, but as a whole, I don't think we really push our young people to get involved enough. And if you're not getting their input or allowing them to reimagine worship, then the church becomes disconnected from people, I think. So I'm just,
yeah,
I like what I'm hearing. Yeah. So, let's talk about your book, The Silliest Day of the Year. And without giving away too much, tell us a little bit about the book.
Well, Silliest Day of the Year is an exploration of all things silly in an even sillier world. Once a year, in a world much like ours, once a year, silly things happen. Dogs walk on two legs. Bacon jumps over the moon. People dip toes in toothpaste and even more.
I love it.
Each page is a sort of description of a...
Say that again, Xavier. I'm sorry. I cut you off.
Each page is like a description of a kooky event. And it's all the stuff that happens on the silliest day of the year.
I love it. Now, you have a younger brother. How is your brother?
He's 7. Just turned 7. April. Seven.
Yeah. Now, did you read that to him?
Actually, he read it to himself. When it got published for the first time, when we got copies in the mail from the company, I handed him a copy. I didn't tell him I wrote it. I just handed him a copy, and I asked him to read it out loud because he used to learn to read at that time. And it was so cool because he read every single word in that book. I kid you not, he read every single word. We were so impressed because he had just been learning to read. So it was really interesting to see him put all the pieces together and read.
That is awesome. And what feedback did he give you?
I'm not going to lie. I don't think he cared very much. He's, of course, very young, so he has all the sorts of books in his room.
Yeah.
I think there's kind of, he might be a little desensitized to children's books, but he still enjoyed it fairly.
Yes, it is a good read. I read it to Solani, so yeah, it's a very
thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, what have you learned about yourself since becoming officially an author? Because I think as we put out our work, we learn a little bit more about ourselves.
Oh yeah. Well, I didn't know this was in me. I didn't know I was capable of something like this.
Wow.
And even when my mom told me that the book was ready to buy on Amazon, I really didn't believe it. I didn't think that the moment could come, but I think that it really taught me what I was capable of and what my potential is, and kind of brought some of that out.
Wow. Now, how old are you, Xavier?
I am 16.
That's awesome. Yeah. I wish at 16 I had that much insight. That's great. Now, what themes or messages do you hope kids will take away from this?
I hope they take away the message that you are free to think outside the box. You can do anything you set your mind to, imagine anything you set your mind to, and you can make it real. I think that's the lesson at the heart of the book.
Well said. Well said. And what advice would you give to other writers who want to publish their own book, their own work?
Stick with it. If it's already finished and you already have something to go, ready to go, stick with it. It can be very deterring at times, but the reward is always worth it. And if you don't have anything and you do want to start writing, just get something out there. So much of the creative process is just brain dumping all your ideas wherever you can, seeing what sticks and seeing what works, what you like, and what really resonates with you, I think. That's a lot of the process for me. Because
wow.
I rewrote it a little bit and ended up liking some stuff more, some stuff less.
Yeah.
And I feel like whenever you feel that creativity coming to you, it's best to use it as soon as possible. Don't let it just sit in your brain and get out at some random time. Get it out whenever you can.
Yeah. Now that sounds like so exciting, just the process. I know, like, when I do my music, I can just, like, you're putting all these pieces together and you really don't know the outcome just yet. And then when it's all done, like, the wow, like, what was your reaction when you saw your book in print for the first time?
I was shocked because honestly, I did not think it would happen. I thought it'd be like months or years off, but it happened a lot faster than I thought it would.
Yeah.
I was really excited. I opened it. I read it. I was happy with it. It was great.
Yeah. Huge accomplishment. And how about your family and friends? How have they reacted to the book?
They have been so supportive. My mom especially. I also dedicated it to her. She was like with me for the whole ride. It was great. She was so supportive and so loving about the whole process. And my friends, I remember I sent the link to my friend and he bought it as soon as I sent it to him. I didn't really tell anybody, but then I made an Instagram post and I was just met with so much love from all my friends. And it was so sweet to see the support.
It's good stuff. So what's next for Xavier?
I have absolutely no idea. I'm going where God takes me.
Man,
I don't intend to stop writing at all in the future. Yeah. Excited to keep doing more, but I'll let you know when the next book comes out.
Please do. Seriously. Now, do you plan on focusing on that genre, like children's book, or stepping outside of those lines?
Well, that's both a yes and a no, because there is something so sweet about seeing a kid laugh and seeing a kid have fun, and it's just a wonderful feeling. I don't know if I could walk away from that forever, like knowing that I made someone that happy, but at the same time, I'm also excited to see what else I can do and how big can I make something. So I think definitely a both and.
I like that because, you know, you're not shutting the door and you're not just saying you won't even go outside of that either. So, that's, yeah, That makes perfect sense. Wow. Really good stuff. So I was just thinking about something. I was talking to you earlier about your involvement in the church, and it just hit me too, because when we started the show, we always talked about the premise of this show is bringing our young people back into the church. And for those who have never been exposed, really exposing them to the gospel. What, looking at it from your angle, what does the church need to do more of or differently, in your opinion, to bring more young people in the church walls? And I know COVID played an impact as well to a lot of churches. I've seen a lot of churches get hit that after COVID. But what do you see from your perspective? What can we do differently or more of?
I think that the thing that makes me want to come to church every Sunday, even though it should be God, it's definitely the community around there and my friends and the fellowship that we have each week. And these are my youth friends. So I feel like once you have that group in church, like a group of God-fearing people, God-centered people that you can really vibe with, you get to look forward to something every Sunday instead of having it necessarily be a chore, which I think it might be for a lot of people. And it can be as simple as like going up to someone, asking how they are, if they're okay, and just going from there. But yeah, I think that church focuses a lot on the outside sometimes instead of focusing on what you already have, instead of just strengthening the bonds that you have yet to build.
I tell you, man, you are, you're one of a kind, sir. That's really good. And it makes sense. I'm trying to think of a good follow-up question to that too, because what I'm hearing is, you know, you always hear about peer pressure, but peer pressure is not always bad, because if you have community, you have peers, other teens who are positively influencing you, that's a good thing. So that's just what I started thinking about that as you were talking, but wow, I really appreciate that. Now, is there a certain, so when you first came into the church, or your church now, your church home, you say born into it. So that's all you've known, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Are there any members there, like any young people who just now are being exposed to the gospel and they're just now getting the church that you know of?
We get new people all the time. Yeah. And I think that the difference between them walking out the door and then coming back next week is the community. Because people who go the whole service, who don't talk, who don't have anyone talk to them or make the effort at least.
Yeah.
Just, they don't feel that connection that you can make in church. They don't feel what fellowship can truly be. Yeah. And once we bridge that gap, they're more likely to come back. They're more likely to enjoy themselves. They're more likely to turn to God. And we've definitely been seeing a lot more of that, I think. Mm-hmm. So
I agree with you, because part of what I do, I go to so many different churches and partner with churches and pastors, and oftentimes I will actually attend a service too. So I think it's important before I get into these relationships, but sitting in there during service, it makes a world of difference at the end of service when people are coming to me and greeting me and asking questions. It just says a lot about the church, the leadership, and the spirit of that family. And happy to say that more often than not, that's the reception I receive. So I totally agree with you. It's great insight. I always give my guests the floor to throw out anything they want to say, but especially about your book, how they can purchase your book. And I promise you all, it is a very good read. The kids will love it. So I'm going to give you the floor if you want to tell them that and anything else you want to add.
Well, The Silliest Day of the Year is available on Amazon under Xavier Sneed in children's books. It is $14.99, and I'm not biased, but I think it's a pretty good book, so yeah. Definitely check it out. Good present for your younger family, younger friends, and it's real enjoyable. I personally like it. Again, I'm not biased, but
yeah.
Anyway, Baptist Grove Church, too. It's a nice welcoming place if you're ever in the, I want to say, I don't know the area, but if you're ever in North Carolina looking for a place to call church, then definitely swing by BGC.
This episode is brought to you by Kingdom Harvest Church, helping people discover, develop, demonstrate, and duplicate God's love as disciple-making leaders.
7109 Leesville Road, Raleigh, North Carolina.
Awesome. Awesome.
Oh, yeah.
And as I said, I've been there twice, and I really enjoyed the service, enjoyed the music, the choir, all of that good stuff, man. And I commend the leadership. Who's your senior, your pastor?
Pastor Ben Koliak and Benue. He does an amazing job. He has been a pastor, I want to say 14 years. Take that with a grain of salt, though. But he's been doing it for a while, and he's one of the best to do it, I think.
Yeah. Well, we see the fruits of everything just through you and mom and dad. So I salute all of you. And please, 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 when you write your next book or other works, reach out to me, and you're always welcome on the Unknown Preacher LA.
Thank you. Yes, I had a wonderful time.
Good, good. Ladies and gentlemen, Xavier Sneed. Xavier, I'll talk to you soon, brother.
I'll talk to you soon. Thank you for having me again.
Indeed, indeed. It's the unknown. Unknown. It's the unknown. Unknown preacher.